And welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us on this Thursday. It is 107 right now. If you want to be a part of the program today, feel free to call us at any point in time. It's 701-293-9000. Or you can reach us via email as well. That's weather at flagfamily.com. Also ag at flagfamily.com. Comment boxes there available on Facebook and YouTube Live. And you can also find us on Acres TV. Again, this is Weather and Ag in Focus. Bridget Dean, what's going on today? We made it another night here.
You were worried about another
night? Well, you just never know. There could be an asteroid or
there was one that hit the Earth's atmosphere yesterday. Did you see that?
And it went... Thank God it was tiny. Could you imagine if that thing was the size of like a skyscraper, though?
We'd be in trouble.
That's what I'm saying. We made it another night.
You know, you guys worry about things a lot differently than I do. I'm just concerned that I get my French onion soup canned this weekend.
I don't worry. I'm just aware.
Just aware.
Just,
very nice.
I just understand that the sun could turn off at any moment.
I'll remember that.
Not scared or afraid of it, just acknowledging.
Oh, okay, fine. So you live in the Truman Show.
Well, you know, it's just a simulation, Bridget. That's right. All this is.
It's the Matrix.
This is... all just a simulation, a simulated world.
Well, if this was just a simulation, I'd like to dial up a better nap. Please let me know when that can arrive.
I'll ask our programmers.
Thank you.
Yes.
So
they
much.
Usually ignore the little request of in-game NPCs, though.
We'll see what I can do. Yeah. Things are good. So it's a lovely day out there. We're seeing some sunshine.
Yeah.
And I would also say, I think farmers are positive. This is a nice way for our weather to finish out. Through the month of September.
But what about the first possible frost of the year?
November 1st. That's my vote.
Ha ha. Yeah. Saturday morning.
Right.
Yeah. How's that?
No.
Saturday morning get you anywhere?
Nope.
Thank God it's not here.
I'm not good with this.
Northeastern Minnesota might hit freezing temperatures Saturday morning. Mm-hmm. 32 to 38 degrees.
For how long?
Okay, a couple hours in the morning.
Yeah, when we talk about a frost, what's the extended period of time?
They just got trees up there. They're fine.
Is this going to go after some of my more sturdy plants? Is it just going to make the peonies lay over and fall apart?
It's taking out all of the corn. All of it.
I'm going to need to sit down for this.
You should. There's a chair right there, Bridget. Okay. Buckle up. We got a bumpy forecast here.
Oh, I don't know if I want to hear anymore.
Northeastern Minnesota.
Okay.
Us, not so much. Yeah. No frost in the valley.
Keep it going. What else do you got to say?
Well, that's about it. Let's just give you a little scare for a quick moment.
Oh, thanks.
Yeah, anyway, we'll run down that full forecast coming up here in just a minute. We got a fun show today, just like most of our shows.
They're usually not heated or angry.
Well, sometimes you just need a good heated conversation to really, get that wow factor across. Like, I can't believe they just said that on the radio.
Well, there'll be those days coming if you've looked
aren't
at the
there
show.
Plenty sure.
Well, I think we need to have more of those days because I feel like we're just missing out on some of that little bit of a wow.
Justin came to argue. I came
to
educate. It's a bit of a challenge.
Don's here to educate as well. It's not going to be a heat. Well, I don't know. Maybe it will be a heated argument there, Don. We got Don Kinsler with us.
Right.
You were wondering, you said, well, we say stuff on the radio where it's like, what did they just say? Kind of the wow factor.
Humum on kuna pakawa.
Yeah.
Like that?
One more time, Bridget.
Humum on kuna pakawa.
Very close. You're very close to that one.
I know a lot of people emailed in, what did she just try and say?
That was the Hawaiian state fish.
We actually got a lot of interaction in the email box on the whole state fish.
Did.
That was pretty fun.
It's either that or that's my tryout for The Lion King. Humum on kuna pakawa.
That was after happy hour.
No, believe me, that was before.
Anyway, if you got any other fun state animals you want us to try and pronounce, you can email them to us. That's weather or ag at flagfamily.com. And at some point, we'll give them a shot, maybe. Also, if you have questions for us or Don, 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe Line. So we got Lawn and Garden Radio coming up today on the program, as well as a few fun topics that we're going to try and get to in between all the lawn and garden questions. Already getting emails coming in about questions for you, Don. So it looks like we're going to have a packed hour here. A couple topics we'll get to. This is helping animals push back against activists, as well as biosecurity during wild bird migration. and weak calf syndrome. And Bridget, I want to hit on that one first because
sure.
What is weak calf syndrome?
Well, it's also known as a dummy calf. And I know this sounds very rude.
Dummy calf.
Dummy calves. So
well, stupid calves, huh?
Kind of.
Stupid cows.
So when calves are born, they should always come out nose first, facing, you know, like nose pointed down.
Yeah.
But if they get hung up in a breech, so mm-hmm. if it's legs, you know, back feet first mm-hmm. or rump first, they can be deprived of oxygen. Also, there can be a pinch in the umbilical cord where the calf doesn't get enough oxygen. So when that calf is born, they literally have been deprived.
They're in a state of hypoxia.
And so at that point, you have a weak calf. Normally, calves like to, they get licked by mom and they want to get up and they want to move and they might not want to do that. Well, we are now at the point where we're looking at some fall calving. We've got folks that do that in this region. And so a reminder from a lot of our state extension folks in the livestock arena saying, keep an eye out for that. Watch for those with, you know, calves, especially if that cow had given birth that way previously. You're going to want to keep an eye on her. There can also be infectious disease that can be linked to that dummy calf syndrome. So watch those cows very carefully, and then especially about calf size.
I've got a stupid question.
Sure.
Now, first, it's a two-part question. Okay. If the cow has had previous breech births,
yes,
do they do ultrasounds?
You can. Yes, you can ultrasound a cow.
If they ultrasound a cow, can they turn the calf around?
They can.
See, it wasn't a stupid question.
If you have a vet there at the time, and that's a great question that we can visit with Dr. Emily Fox the next time we have her on. But yeah, you can actually reach in and turn the calf. You just need to know that she's ready to calve.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. And right now with fall calving, you have some folks with nice weather like this, they might be calving out on pastures. So you might not see them all the time.
Right.
So you got to know the health and the history of your herd.
Gotcha.
So does this cause like a permanent thing, or is it just kind of a temporary thing?
It can be permanent for the calf.
Okay, so like a brain damage thing, a lack of oxygen for too long.
Right, and then they're not going to have good rate of gain.
Sure.
Which is what you're trying to do. You know, you're trying to beef that animal up. Look what I did there: beef up a beef animal.
And that's good.
When you're trying to when you're doing that, that's where your dollars and cents come in, is when you're trying to grow that animal.
Okay. Now, this sounds kind of mean, but if they know it's going to be a quote-unquote dummy calf and it's not going to give them the return, would they put them down? Or
I don't think you know that very well in advance necessarily. But okay. If that cow had had breech, you're going to try to turn her, and you're okay. going to try to feed that calf and see what can come of them too.
Okay.
But we don't have a lot of fall calving. We have some, and in fact, this is quickly approaching weaning time, where we're bringing cow calf pairs back in from pasture, and it's time to start separating the calves from their mothers. And feeding them separately, that type of thing. Gets pretty loud in the farmyard when you do that.
So some people get a little, maybe aren't quite all in the know, and they jump to assumptions here. Now,
sure.
Oh, Bridget, how dare you take that calf away from its mother? How dare you do that?
You left
home.
How
can you help the animals push back against activists who maybe just don't know truly what's going on there?
You know, you left home at 18. You were able to separate, consider that weaning, right?
Totally, so not 21.
Taking calves away, you know, it's not as harsh as it sounds. Those animals are ready to live on their own and be a productive animal all by themselves. What we're seeing with some of these animal activists is there is a group out there, and I got to look up their name, but their initials are like CWFI. What they have recently done is started publishing a map of large animal operations across the United States and Canada, encouraging activists to go to the farms, and create havoc. And what that does, you know, first of all, they show up at a farm and they're not following biosecurity protocols, especially with hog and poultry operations. Now you could be bringing in disease, especially as our migratory waterfowl start moving around. You could bring bird flu into a poultry site. Then you have the opportunity where they open up gates and allow those animals out. Those animals aren't used to being out wandering around. We don't need them on the roadways or in town, because that just creates more chaos for the animals. Stress. And when law enforcement has not gone through like a livestock emergency preparedness training from NDSU, mm-hmm. they will put the animal down, not knowing, mm-hmm. or chase them. I mean, it can get pretty out of hand pretty fast. So what those activists are trying to do is just continue to create chaos. And it will affect us as a country by the bottom line, because it increases our costs when we're raising those animals, which in turns around and goes right up the food chain to what we have to pay at the grocery stores.
Hmm. You don't think about that stuff.
No. You don't. I know it's all costly.
Yeah, sure is. Well, coming up here on Weather and Ag in Focus, as I had mentioned, Don Kinsler, NDSU horticulturalist, is going to be joining us in just a couple moments. He's actually standing right now. No, he's sitting right to
actually,
my right.
Actually sitting
right
here.
He's
yeah, sitting. Good afternoon.
Eagerly waiting for all of our fun lawn garden questions. And if any listeners, you got some questions, even dumb ones like Dean just
asked
earlier.
That ended up being a good question.
They're usually decent questions, so don't feel
intimidated
or embarrassed.
It's never a dumb or stupid question.
There never is, just dumb people asking questions.
I've never received what I'd consider a dumb question in gardening. There really aren't any. Yeah, we all learn, continue to learn. Yeah. We're all in it together. Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And if one person's thinking it, odds are other people are thinking it too.
Right?
Absolutely.
So feel free to call up during our break here. We'll get you all queued up if you got anything about your lawn, your garden, your shrubs, your trees. Why does this one plant just always want to die? What am I doing wrong? Well, Don will tell you. I don't think you've not answered a single question.
Oh, it's not hard to stump me. You know, someone asked about how to grow tobacco. Actually, you know, the type that you'd grow in Georgia or somewhere.
Yeah.
You know, the ins and outs of growing tobacco. And, well, we kind of don't do that here. And so I had to brush up on my tobacco growing knowledge.
And are you utilizing that knowledge now?
No.
Oh.
No, I'm not. Yeah, that's the one time in 50 years I think I've had that question.
Yeah, well, cool. See, we're always learning. So we'll get your questions, our questions answered as well. I got a handful of aronia berries here. Did I say that right there, Don?
Yes, aronia. A-R-O-N-I-A.
And
aronia.
They got a fun thing going up there at the Nelson Farm, don't they?
They do this weekend. It's the Aronia Berry Festival at the Nelsons.
If you don't know what an aronia berry is, they're very sweet. They're a little tart. I'm excited to see how many it takes to choke me up on the radio, but I'm really looking forward to eating these and learning more. And we got a whole thing of muffins here, so we got fun stuff coming up on the show today. We'll take a quick moment, get caught up with the American Ag Network. We'll come back with Lawn and Garden Radio. And welcome back to the program. It's 1:22:31 right now. It's time for Lawn and Garden Radio with Don Kinsler. If you got any questions, feel free to call us. I see we got a couple folks online here. We can get you queued up. 701-293-9000 is the Red Wing Shoe line. And you can utilize that at any point of the hour to get in contact with us. You can also send your emails to weather@flagfamily.com if you're unable to send a phone call during the moment. We're going to head over to the Red Wing Shoe phone line right now. We got Linda on line one. Linda, welcome to Weather and Ag and Focus. You got a question for Don?
Yes. I have a raised garden bed, and it started out just beautiful. Everything was growing and lush, and somewhere in July, everything stopped growing. With the exception of my carrots and parsnips.
Oh, well, first of all, good afternoon to you and good afternoon to everybody. So a couple of questions. What type of a soil mix or what type of a blend did you use in the raised garden?
Well, we have River Valley black dirt and we have worm castings, peat, and some just topsoil that you buy.
Sure. And
we mix it really well. We're we're very diligent on taking care of it in the fall and in the spring.
Great. So when you mentioned that things just kind of stopped growing, did you just not get much new growth, or was the new growth that came out, was it distorted or all or anything? And the reason I asked that was occasionally in raised gardening, people will use maybe some rotted manure, maybe some compost, something that still has herbicide residual in it. And so that is always a problem. And because some of the, for example, pasture-type herbicides can pass through the animal, persist in manure even after it's well rotted, and some of those things, when they end up in raised gardens, can cause real problems. So that's why I was kind of asking maybe the history of that soil mix. But if things, for example, tomato plants will get curled, cupped leaves and potato plants and things that are very sensitive. But if you haven't noticed anything on the foliage or the growth that looked unusual, but if they're just really slow, a couple of things can happen. One of those is a raised garden just by its nature tends to drain good, which is great, but mm-hmm. that also means that you need to water it more, and the increased watering can be leaching nitrogen and fertilizer out of that soil. So a person will oftentimes need to fertilize a little more because a person is leaching some of the material out of that, some of the nutrients. And so a person... Sure. Sometimes we'll need to watch the fertility either with a water-soluble type or a granular type of vegetable fertilizer that you would add. So I guess the main things to see would be, are just thing, were things just kind of slow or did they have abnormal growth?
My beans only got maybe 6-7 inches tall.
Oh, sure.
And they stopped.
And then they stopped. So I'd look at probably the nutrition. A person could always send a soil sample to NDSU. Just simply Google NDSU soil testing, or if you're in Minnesota, University of Minnesota, and get a soil test to see what the nutrition is. Then they can help adjust if needed. And so anyway,
my beets also have done the same thing, and I've had beets in that location before, and they performed amazing. I gave it a break from beets, and this year put them in, and they're maybe 6 inches tall, and the beet itself 2 inches in diameter, if that.
Sure.
So it's just really bizarre. I had people in the spring taking pictures of my garden because it was so...
Oh, no.
Because it started out so well and then at a certain point just didn't do anything. So I would look at the fertility that the soil might be getting depleted a little bit. But the other thing is I'm going to blame this gardening season a little bit in that because we've been up and down and all around. You're not the only one whose garden hasn't performed. I think out of the last 50 gardens that I've had, this ranks among maybe the most disappointing. And I'm an optimist.
Mm-hmm.
And and a Facebook is loaded with people whose tomatoes and vegetables just have not performed. And so in addition to the possible nutrient type things in the soil, I'm going to maybe blame this growing season a little bit. It's not been a banner year for vegetables.
It really hasn't. And Linda, I appreciate the phone call. Thanks for calling. Peppers this year, just not a good year for peppers at all. It's just too cool, too wet. And my peppers outside of my Thunderbolt peppers, they're not great. They're there, but they're not great. So I think it is just part of the weather.
Next year is always going to be better.
Sure.
The optimist.
I hope so.
The optimist of growing anything.
We're like Nebraska football fans. Next year's always better.
Next year is this year. Don, I've got a question for you. So I'm going to be re-landscaping, redoing the whole front yard up next to the house. And I'll probably be doing this end of this month. Now, I want to plant a couple rose bushes and put a couple hostas in there. Should I wait until spring to do that, or is it okay to do that this fall?
With almost anything you can plant this time of year in the fall. And I try to aim for before the end of September if you can.
Okay.
And so trees, shrubs, perennials, absolutely plant. The one thing I maybe would wait until next spring would be the roses. Because just roses, I mean, there are good winter hardy Canadian type roses, but just by nature, they can be a little more tender than some things. I'd wait on the roses, just save the spot. But almost anything else, yes, plant. Good time in September.
Okay.
Sure. Well, we got to take a quick moment here with bottom of the hour news. I still got this little cup of aronia berries.
Oh, yeah.
But a lot of people have no idea what these little berries are.
Well, we got to talk about
this
aronia.
Fun little festival.
A wonderful shrub.
Yeah.
Oh, these things are great.
Aronia and buckthorn. That's what I'm waiting to hear.
Because actually,
about.
The berries look somewhat similar, and you do not want to use a buckthorn berry in place of an aronia berry.
Maybe I could plant that in the front yard.
Well, let's talk about it when we come back.
All
so
right.
Stick with us, folks. We'll be right back. And welcome to Weather and Ag in Focus. Thank you for joining us. And a huge thank you to sponsors for our Here We Grow project, our custom farming 20 acres of corn near Glendon, Minnesota. Red River Retention Authority, Brian Feuder, has really been on board to making sure that we bring information to all of you regarding what the Red River Retention Authority is doing with dam rehabilitation this year. And it's been helpful even for our corn project. Also to Gowan Company with Affiance Fungicide. Two modes of action in that fungicide, not only for corn, but we used it last year in our soybeans. So thank you to those two companies for all their help. So Don, let's start with the aronia berries. You brought us some things to look at and sample, and I bet they're going to lead us to the buckthorn. So where would you like to begin
on this? There's a lot of good to say about aronia. Okay, you may have heard about it in the news over the last, six, seven, eight, 10 years, because aronia berries are higher in healthy antioxidants than even blueberry, three times the antioxidants. And so there's a lot of medical studies that are being conducted with, so far, good reports. Everything from reducing arthritis, reducing inflammation. They're looking at it for cancer prevention, cancer fighting, lowering high blood pressure, you know, lots of good things that these antioxidants do. And the wonderful thing is, in any area, Red River Valley and West, we cannot grow blueberries.
Right.
But these are healthier than blueberries, and they're well adapted. They love our soil type, Red River Valley and on West. They love alkaline soils. They're fully hardy, winter hardy up into Canada. They're a wonderful landscape shrub. My wife Mary and I have one up in the front corner of our porch. They go about 5 feet high, 5 feet wide. Different named cultivars will vary a little bit, so check the height. They're available at garden centers. If you can't find it, this
5 feet tall, 5 feet wide, that was the size of my great grandma.
Oh,
yeah. It's an easy measurement.
And if the garden centers are sold out now, check in the spring for them. And they blossom a nice white in the spring of the year, glossy foliage. In the fall of the year, the shrub is coppery red color, so great fall color. And they produce these clusters of kind of purplish black, bluish black berries, fruits. And the birds do not bother them. They're a little bit astringent for eating fresh.
They're a little tart.
Yeah, I like them in a bowl with a little bit of sugar.
Whipped cream.
You know? Yeah, sugar with cream. They can be used in any recipes, such as the aronia berry muffins that you would use blueberries in. They freeze beautifully. Picking is easy because they're born up in clusters on a shrub, and so picking is easy. One shrub that's about 5 years old has given us each year since it came into bearing about 2 ice cream buckets full of fruit.
Oh, that's a good
and they
harvest.
Freeze easy. Just wash them, put them in a Ziploc bag, pop them into the freezer. So easy to grow. Birds don't bother them. You don't need to net them. The spotted wing Drosophila, the things that attack raspberries, don't attack these. And so it's probably the tannins in them. The tannins are the same thing in wines that give it the dryness to them. And so the tannin content is probably why the birds and the insects don't go for them. So it's a wonderful winter hardy. So, yeah, a great double duty shrub. Look great in the landscape and give us good fruit. And they're so healthy.
Yeah, they're tart for sure.
Yeah, they have a tart dryness fresh. And, of course, they're approaching ripeness. You want to harvest them for sure. Leave them on as long as possible, but don't let them start to wither.
Are they safe with domestic animals, cats, dogs?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There's no toxicity that would harm them. Of course, any time that they eat something that they're not used to eating could certainly cause stomach upset.
Sure.
So let's say you want to know more about aronia berries. Just so happens that this weekend is the Aronia Berry Festival in Aminia, North Dakota, out at the Nelson Farm. And that is from noon to 4. I'm reading it right off their websites. Live music. They will have vendors out there. You'll get to see their harvesting process with the harvester. Lots of kids' games and that type of thing. The Cottonwood Cider House from AIR, they're planning on being there. There's a lot that you can do to be a part of that day. But then the best part is you get to try the aronia berries. And so Justin and I are busy shooting
I'm
over here.
I'm just chowing these things down. And
you know, it's it's fascinating. Of the in North Dakota acreage, the fruit that occupies the most commercial acreage isn't, you might think, apples maybe. But no, it's aronia. And aronia berries, there's a large market for them, both nationally and internationally, because of the health benefits of them. And so there is a market for the fruit.
Now, we talked about this before you and I got on air today, and that is there is a a wild berry that looks a suspiciously like the aronia berry. And so if Addison could put that in our live stream today, I took a picture of this. It's buckthorn.
Yes.
And so let's talk about what that is.
Common buckthorn. You know, and of course, where you might encounter common buckthorn is if you're out in the woods or shelter belt and you see this shrub, or they can be a kind of a smallish tree, large shrub, kind of shrubby, smallish tree, but bearing these clusters of blue-black, kind of bluish-black
yes.
type berries. And they're about the same size as an aronia.
They are.
But that is the common buckthorn. And the Latin name, botanical name of that is Rhamnus cathartica. And, of course, anything that is cathartic causes lots of stomach upset. And so they are not to be consumed because they have that toxicity to them. And a couple of years ago, someone emailed me, sent me a photo of this small tree. And she had made about 20 pints of jelly from these berries, and she thought they were choke cherries, although these are bigger than choke cherries.
And
someone said, you know, maybe you should have checked what that actually was, and it was common buckthorn. So, of course, you would – luckily we caught it before she gave the jelly away to anyone else. And so anyway, ways that you can identify this. Okay, and this is a very common sample that I receive for identification because it pops up where in unexpected places.
Sure.
And so what is this kind of shrubby tree that's popping up and producing these berries? Okay, the reason it pops up is the birds eat the berries, and of course their digestive system is different than ours.
You know? It's weak.
Exactly. But anyway, they drop these seeds all over the place, and so they pop up where you least expect them. I've seen buckthorn popping up in our landscape currently. Okay, and so the way that you identify these, and these are a tremendous nuisance in shelter belts and wild plantings because they crowd everything else out. They're that invasive. Okay, so the way you identify common buckthorn is if you look at the leaves, they're a rounded leaf, and they have a very prominent, lighter-colored vein in them. So you look at them and say, wow, I can really see those veins. But if you look at the point at which the leaf is attached to the stem, they have pointed buds. That's where the name buckthorn, you know, buck, horn. Mm-hmm. The buds are a brownish bud, and they're very pointed, like a buck. Buck's horn. And also look at the twigs, and they have very prominent white lenticels. Those are the little white dots along the twig. And also, you know, from botany, how leaves are arranged on a plant or like a tree, either opposite, you know, straight across, or they're alternate. They kind of alternate their position down along the twig. Well, buckthorn are very diagnostic in that they're called sub-opposite buds. They're not quite opposite. They're just kind of little kitty corner awesome. Across from each other, and that's quite diagnostic. And so, and of course, then they have these berries. So those are some ways, and it is a major problem in shelter belts. They'll crowd out the good stuff, and even in the kind of the wild native plantings.
And for farmers, when we talk about soybean aphids, buckthorn is the overwintering host plant for soybean aphid.
Sure.
Oh, wow.
So for a farm, if you have shelter belts that have buckthorn in your shelter belts,
well,
you now see
are.
Where your source is.
They have a wonderful wintering home right there.
I got one for you, Don. And callers,
what's
hang
that?
On. 701-293-9000. That's the Red Wing Shoe phone line. Bonnie, you'll be first here in just a sec. I got a big tree on the boulevard on the other side of the street I live on. Big old tree, purple leaves. Never seen a tree with purple leaves before. It's got black little berries on it. Do you know what that is?
First thing that comes to mind is the Canada red cherry. Canada red cherry, one of the few winter hardy purple leaved trees. And the purple berries, that is actually, it's got an interesting history. That is a purple leaved choke cherry. In fact, in about the 1930s, in the soil conservation plantings in Bismarck, a fellow by the name of Lawrence Schubert, in all the little seedling choke cherries, green leaf, he saw, oh, there's a purple one. And so he selected that, and so it was known as the Schubert choke cherry. The Canadians got wind of that, and they, well, that's Schubert choke cherry isn't really a good marketing, so they called it Canada red cherry, propagated it, and it's in the nursery trade. You can buy them. I've got a couple of mm-hmm. them. They produce the same edible choke cherries, except the birds really seem to love them even better than the regular choke cherries. And so, but yeah, the edible choke cherries.
Cool.
They do have a problem. Well, most trees have something, you know.
Right.
But they're wonderful. They do have a kind of a fungus disease that can attack them. But
sure.
they're good. Great
I
plants.
See. Hey, Bonnie, great, thanks great for holding on here. You got a question for Dawn?
Yes, we have the farmstead that we live on. We have a couple of very old established lilac bushes, rows of lilac bushes, and they looked all summer long like they're dying, like the dead leaves on them. And now we've noticed that there's new growth on them, and actually got a couple of growths of flowers. And then the other thing on the farm. Yeah.
Wow.
And then the other thing is we have a very big old established cottonwood tree in our yard, and it's losing, the leaves are all turning brown and falling off already.
Yep, exactly. I know exactly what you mean. Okay, let's start with the lilacs. I've seen established, they've probably been there 50 years, you know, the outer row of a shelter belt, there are lilacs driving by, and the everything, it was all brown and looked just absolutely terrible. Okay, so here's what's gone on. In the spring of the year, of course, we had extended long-term rain, wet periods, and the region was a petri dish for fungi. And so a lot of things, a lot of diseases got started. One of those was apple scab. The ornamental crab apples look absolutely terrible currently. They've lost most of their leaves. Okay, on lilacs, another type of leaf fungus disease got started on the lilacs, turning them all brown and looking absolutely terrible. In some cases, most of the leaves were left. So sometimes when a person gets a bad stress like that, a lilac will be kind of kicked into survival mode and then send out some new growth and maybe even bloom. You know, that's not unheard of, but stress during the summer tends to kick that survival mode in. And so now hopefully, knock on wood, your lilacs are going to be fine. Check the, knocked on wood, great. Anyway, check the buds. Next year's buds will already be in place on those lilacs. Nice big fat buds. You should see those. So everything will be well as long as they've got next year's buds in place and visible. And let's hope next year we do not have that long extended rainy period.
Right.
Because we just so many foliage. And so your cottonwood also was attacked by, and most of these are separate individual fungus type diseases. Willows, big mm-hmm. problem this year. Ash anthracnose. But it was just a total, the best year ever if you were a fungus. And
yeah, ask the barley growers. It was bad.
This was probably the worst year I've ever seen for some of these. And lilacs, sure. I mean, these lilacs that have been there 50 years, you know, and to succumb to some of these things. So knock on wood, this is a stress on trees. And so let's hope all will be well and we don't have the same condition next year.
Right. Appreciate it, Bonnie. Thanks for calling in. We're going to head over to Larry now. Hi, Larry. What's your question for Don?
My question is, how do you get rid of aphids? I seem to get them every year, and I've used several sprays and stuff like that on them, but it has never seems to work.
Yeah, what are they growing on, the aphids? Vegetables or flowers?
Flowers.
On flowers. Yeah, a couple of things. I really like the insecticide called 8. You know, there's 7's a long time, insecticide 8. You know, I'm still waiting for 9 to be produced because that'll be really good. But anyway, I like the insecticide 8. It's a broad spectrum insecticide that can be used on vegetables, flowers, many things, fruit trees, for example. And just read the label carefully, observe the waiting period if you use them on vegetables. But it's quite effective on aphids. And I've gotten quite a few emails this year about people bothered by aphids, and I've suggested the insecticide 8. There's a dust, but I like the spray, you know, your little 2-gallon pump sprayer, because I think you get better coverage. And so the insecticide 8 is a good one to have on your shelf for many insect problems. Just like the number, EIGHT.
Mm-hmm. Right on. There you go, Larry. Thanks for calling and listening. Appreciate it. We got another email question here. I sprayed my lawn with a water-based Ortho brand weed killer this weekend, the kind where you attach the bottle to the garden hose. Now I want to apply fertilizer for the fall, but I have, or but all I have is a generic Scotts weed and feed that you would apply with a walk-behind spreader. Can I apply weed and feed now, or do I need to wait a certain amount of time between applying the water-based weed killer and the weed and feed, or is it best just to buy a fertilizer without weed killer in it?
It is best to buy the fertilizer without the weed killer in it, and here's why. Most of our lawns are not a carpet of weeds, mm-hmm. and so there's no reason to be applying a weed killer over the entire thing, because the weed and feed products, when you read the label, the lawns have to be wet or dewy, because that those granules of weed killer have to stick to currently growing weeds. You know, they don't do a good job of preventing weeds. And most of our lawns, since they aren't a carpet of weeds, we don't have weeds for those granules to stick to. So you're applying a fairly expensive product that most of it is going to go to waste. Instead, you've usually got a weed here, a weed there, maybe a couple of weeds over there. And so I like the hose end sprayer, that product that he mentioned, the weed killer, or just, again, my little 2-gallon pump sprayer, and then spot spray the lawn weeds, I think is a more effective way of doing it. So it's important to understand the mechanism of control of the weed and feed. It's not a preventer. It has to stick to actively growing dandelions or other weeds.
I see. Right on. Larry, got another question for Don here?
Yes. I wanted to know, do those aphids die off in the wintertime, or do they hibernate, or...
They die off. The entomologist could give us the exact mechanism. They die off. I'm sure they overwinter, though, too. But also, aphids are so light and tricky that they float in on wind currents. And so they're kind of my biology teacher used to say that things like that are ubiquitous. He used to enjoy rolling that around in his mouth. Ubiquitous, meaning they're always with us.
Well, if we apply what we know about soybean aphids, they do indeed tend to overwinter. They use buckthorn
sure.
here. They found their host plant. But you're right. When we have nice, warm, southerly winds, they'll float right on up here from other parts of the country. Aphids generally have a very high reproduction rate. They're normally born pregnant with their next generation, so they can replicate very quickly.
Wow.
And you start to see that because of it, you feel like you're constantly being swarmed because there's just a constant rate of them.
Sure, and to your point, Larry, so it would be important to apply an insecticide to kill those so that the current ones there aren't going to overwinter. And, it, you know, it does mean they're going to not float in on the good warm stream in the...
Or from the neighbors.
Or the neighbors, exactly. The good thing about aphids, what I love, is at least on ornamental plants, we have insecticides that are pretty good at control.
There you go. Well, appreciate the question, Larry. Thank you for calling. Let's see. You guys got any other questions?
I think I got all of mine so far, but we'll keep talking or we'll keep in touch about canning questions and garden vegetables, and there'll be so much more coming when it comes to fall.
And Don, thank you again for bringing the Aronia berry muffins.
They were great.
Yeah, aren't they great
just
in the muffins?
Berries themselves?
Yeah. I didn't talk. I was eating.
So now I've got to make a road trip to Amenia to get some berries so I can make these.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why it's so fun to grow your own. But I mean, I'm totally amazed and awesome. I love it that they're growing Aronia berries because that makes a local source. Mm-hmm. I wish the grocery stores would start handling these as they do blueberries.
Yes.
Maybe we talk it up, they'll start doing that.
That's all we got to do is that field behind us. We'll just grow some of these here old berries.
You guys have room for a field of Aronia berries.
We'll go pick them and we'll go sell them to Hornbalkers.
But in the meantime, I'm so happy that Nelson and other farms are growing Aronia.
They are indeed.
That is awesome. All right, Don, we'll appreciate coming in here.
Thank you for inviting me.
Some of our listeners' questions and a handful of email questions. If anyone wants to get in contact with you about further issues, you possibly do that.
Send me an email, donald.kinzler, KINZLER, @ ndsu.edu, and I'm always happy to hear from everyone.
Awesome. Do you guys got any newsletters or webinars or anything like that with NDSU?
Well, stay tuned, because I usually do 2 fall webinars, so stay tuned. I'll put it out on different media.
Yep.
Right on.
Send the press release. We'll share that, too.
All right.
Thanks so much, Don.
Appreciate it. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Well, we'll take a short moment here when we come back to check on the forecast. We still got an ag topic and your questions, so stay tuned. And welcome back to the program. Thanks for joining what little is left of the show. 157 right now. I think we have I don't know, just enough time to run down the forecast?
Yeah, we've got some clouds mixed with sun temperatures
here,
in the...
Hold up.
All right, come on, man.
I've got to do this one really fast. Get with it, Storm. All right, let's potter down. Ready?
Get with it.
Humum an kuna pakawa.
All right, now you can continue.
All right. Well, we've got partly cloudy skies for the rest of the afternoon. High's pretty close to 70 today with a north wind about 10 to 25. We'll calm the winds down tonight. We'll clear things out, drop off into the mid-40s with light northwest winds. And northwest winds about 5 to 10 tomorrow with highs, again, close to 70. We'll call it the upper 60s. And then Saturday, we warm up a little bit, low 70s with south winds 10 to 15, warming up close to 80 on Sunday. And then we are in the 80s all next week.
Woo-hoo.
So great weather for Big Iron. Make sure to come out and see us. We will be at the Brenko Building.
No, we're at the Morton Building.
Oh, we're at the Morton Building. I'm sorry. All right, we're at the Morton Building. Come out and see us. I'll be out there live.
Wednesday from noon to 1 o'clock. We'll have social media folks joining us, and then we'll be doing our show every day there in the Morton Building, 1 to 2 o'clock.
Sweet.
Sweet, because North Coast Sweet Crude's coming to see us on Tuesday.
On Tuesday. Wednesday could be a long day.
Tuesday is going to be a fun day.
Yeah.
Well, maybe see you guys tomorrow. Have a great day.